Hello, and welcome back to The Voiceless, a true crime podcast. I'm Ash, and today is a solo episode. Content warning, today's episode mentions domestic violence and sexual assault. Listener discretion is advised. So today's case is Dustin LaFortune and was suggested by our first patron, Eric. So thank you, Eric, and I hope I do this case justice for you. In April 2010, a man was dropped off at a hospital in Regina, Saskatchewan. He was covered in wounds head to toe and had multiple injuries, including broken bones, cuts around the genitals, and a face beaten so badly that his own mother couldn't recognize him. Doctors described him as looking like an advanced cancer care patient, and he was far away from his most recent home in Calgary. This man was Dustin LaFortune. When news broke in Regina, everyone asked themselves, what happened to this man, and who could have done this to him? And the short answer is Dustin Paxton, a narcissistic psychopath with a long history of manipulation and violence. Dustin LaFortune suffered through months and months of horrific abuse at the hands of a truly disturbed and dangerous person. So going back a few years, Paxton, which is what I will be referring to Dustin Paxton as, since Dustin Paxton and Dustin LaFortune have the same first name, he will be known as Paxton. So Paxton and Dustin met each other in Winnipeg in 2008, and during this time there was an oil boom happening in Alberta, so there were lots and lots of jobs available and they were paying really well. And for those who aren't familiar, Alberta is the oil hub of Canada. So Paxton thought it was the perfect idea to move to Calgary with his friend Dustin to start a business together. Paxton promised big money and success to Dustin, and since the economy in Manitoba at this time was stagnant, they both agreed and they moved to Calgary. Once they were set up in Calgary, it became very obvious to Dustin and their employees that Paxton had an explosive temper. Dustin later reported that the beating started the day the two men moved into their rental house. Dustin accidentally knocked over a chair and Paxton hit him with a steel-toed boot. Both Dustin and another employee said that Paxton would fly into a rage at the smallest things, like leftovers in the fridge, for example. This employee said that Paxton once told Dustin to leave the room because his breathing annoyed him, which is excessive. Dustin was obviously desperate for the beatings to stop. He had become increasingly isolated from his friends and family, and was trapped in the same rental unit as his abuser all day, every day. However, he feared that coming forward with the abuse would result in losing the business he had worked so hard to build, and he was worried about being labeled like a quote sissy, or less of a man, or whatever people are calling it these days. So shortly after this started, Paxton started offering the exchange of sexual favors to prevent the beatings. Dustin submitted, coerced by the threat of violence. And just like a side note, this is not consent. This is rape. I don't care what anybody says. That's not consent. So Paxton apparently demanded perfection and perfect obedience from everyone in his life and was unafraid to use violence to make sure he got what he wanted. So despite their new quote agreement, the beatings progressed. Dustin believes he received brain damage early on in their partnership or relationship, business partnership, whatever. This was later confirmed by medical professionals that Dustin was left with permanent brain damage from the beatings. And in the Instagram pictures I'm going to be posting, the last one, I'm going to put it at the end because it is fairly graphic. It shows the progression of like what Dustin looked like before and then like the months through and to like the end when this all came to an end. And it is horrific. In March 2010, just 2 years after their business partnership began, Dustin and Paxton closed their business and moved to Regina, Saskatchewan. Here, the beatings and rape continued. Their neighbors testified that they heard sounds that suggested violence coming from their apartment on many occasions, including screaming. This was never reported to police as far as I could find, but Paxton also terrorized other neighbors in the apartment building, threatening anyone who angered him with violence. So, there's that. In April 2010, things changed, and while it isn't clear what caused this change, it could have been that Dustin's family hadn't heard from him and had filed a missing persons report in Alberta, or that Paxton had reached the top of his psychopathic cycle with Dustin, or he felt he no longer had a use for Dustin as he had drained every bit of his former self out of him. But Paxton ended up dropping Dustin off at the hospital. And when I say drop off, he actually like abandoned him at the hospital before fleeing back to Alberta. So just for reference, before all of this happened, Dustin generally weighed about 245 pounds. I believe he was around 6 feet tall. So he was big, like in general. But when he was abandoned at the hospital, he weighed only 87 pounds. So that's just for context of like the amount and, intensity of the abuse that Dustin endured for these, I think it was like 16 months. So Dustin Paxton was arrested in Edmonton in August 2010, and shortly after began the many tests to determine his fitness to stand trial. In November of the same year, he was deemed fit to stand trial, and the trial began on September 2011. So just for anyone who didn't know, because I didn't know before looking into this, that the reason that it usually takes so long from arrest or charging somebody to trial is due to the discovery phase, which is gathering and reviewing evidence, selecting jurors, finding witnesses, etc. And especially in this case, there was a lot of physical evidence to gather and review. So in addition to the physical evidence, which is like every single wound on Dustin's body, 50 witnesses were also called to testify. According to arrest warrants, police believe Dustin was held in Calgary against his will between December 1st, 2008 and March 2nd, 2010. They also believed he was confined a second time in Regina between March 15th and April 16th. During the six-month trial and sentencing, Paxton made it blatantly clear to everyone how much of an actual piece of shit he is. He admitted to beating his roommate, but he never referred to the beatings as physical abuse or torture. He also never admitted to sexually assaulting Dustin. And his attitude always seemed to go back and forth between "I'm too good for this" and explosive anger. And he even smirked while Dustin was reading his victim impact statement. So, yeah, he could fuck right off. So Dustin was allowed to read his statement behind a screen, thankfully. So he did not see Paxton's reaction, but the judge definitely saw it, as did everyone else. One of the witnesses had audio evidence of one of the beatings he inflicted on Dustin, which caused Paxton to yell and threaten this witness during trial. Paxton's legal team's defense was constantly trying to poke holes in the credibility of the witnesses and to discredit Dustin. The trial concluded in early December 2011, and judgment was passed in February 2012. Dustin Paxton was found guilty of aggravated and sexual assault. His sentencing didn't happen right away, as the judge had to rule whether or not Paxton was a dangerous offender. And I will get into that a little bit later as to why that was important. During the conviction, Paxton once again showed how absolutely horrible of a human being he is. When he was convicted of sexual assault, he became visibly angry, and continued to deny that he sexually assaulted Dustin. So Paxton was not convicted of forcible confinement, though. This is because it was believed that Dustin was able to go to work and could leave his home freely. So to the surprise of only Paxton and no one else, he was deemed a dangerous offender. The psychological assessments that led to this conclusion found that Paxton was an all-around piece of shit, which are my words, not theirs. I don't think you can actually put that in a psychological assessment. Specifically, he was violent, manipulative, and lacked empathy. With this dangerous offender designation, this means that Paxton can be kept in prison indefinitely, and if he ever gets released, his information will be broadcast in the media across the country. But luckily, it doesn't look like he will be getting out anytime soon, if ever. So of course, Paxton's legal team immediately filed an appeal. It didn't work. The defense appealed the sentence, specifically the sexual assault sentence, which got denied. The Court of Appeals concluded that there was no way Paxton could have reasonably assumed Dustin's consent. They then appealed the dangerous offender designation, which also got denied. And finally, they tried to argue that the judge was biased and therefore the trial was unfair. That was also denied. And we understand that it is their job to defend these assholes, but just give it up already. After the trial was over, Dustin argued that what happened to him was not just aggravated assault, it was torture. The media seemed to agree with Dustin, and to be clear, so do I, and so does Cheyenne. In the Canadian media, Dustin Paxton is often referred to as a convicted torturer. So in Canada, torture of civilians by the state is obviously super illegal. However, torture of one civilian by another is not, which I find confusing. And cases of torture are generally tried as aggravated assault. So two nurses from Nova Scotia also agreed with Dustin, and they have been working with him to fight to change this law. This started in 2016. And as of November 2018, which was the latest update I could find, they are still working with the government and the UN to make this happen. So since all of this, Dustin has reported having a good life following his ordeal. He has since gotten married and is committed to healing himself and being a good father to his children. Little side note, apparently Paxton and his girlfriend at the time, I don't know if they're still together, who knows, who is apparently also not the greatest person in the world, they were almost on Dr. Phil, so take from that what you will. So fun fact, Canadian law and American law differ in many ways, obviously, but in regards to this case, by Canadian law, life in prison maxes out at 25 years, which I do not understand, because 25 years is nowhere close to a person's lifespan normally. I mean, maybe if this was like the 1800s, then it would make sense. Whereas in the States, life in prison generally means like life in prison. With Paxton receiving the dangerous offender designation, this means he would have to prove to the courts/parole board that he is no longer a danger to society and not a risk to the public, which, let's get real, I don't think will ever happen, thankfully. So I want to give a shout out to one of my sources for this episode. It is elkascott.wordpress.com. They wrote an amazing article on this case, and also included a piece I loved regarding a reporter named Barbara Kay, who wrote for the National Post, who really missed the point in general of what happened to Dustin. So to start it off, Barbara refers to the left as, quote, an amorphous boogeyman of angry anti-grammar hippies. She also apparently has a questionable stance on women's issues, Islamophobia in Canada, and the LGBTQ plus issues. So yeah, there's that. In some of her articles regarding this case, Barbara kind of insinuates that Dustin was a willing victim of domestic violence and complicit in his abuse because he didn't leave. There was also an article she wrote regarding a case where a wife killed her husband in self-defense that she compared with this case. And first of all, nowhere close to the same. Also, you should never compare domestic violence cases, or any case in general. In any follow-up interviews or during trial, Dustin has never said that he wanted to hurt or kill Paxton in any way. He just wanted to move on with his life. So now I'm going to go off on a little tangent regarding abuse specifically towards men. So men who are abused have a different and unique battle to face when getting justice for what they have dealt with, especially since men generally are brought up to be, quote, masculine, or like, boys don't cry, men don't cry, and anything other than big macho man kind of mentality means you are less of a man. Abuse statistics against men are hard to come by, as men generally do not come forward as to not appear weak to society, which is honestly so sad and so fucked up that this is the mentality around masculinity. It is suggested that IPV, or intimate partner violence, happens to men in both same and opposite sex relationships at equal rates as women. Despite this, there are limited resources for men going through and trying to escape these situations. For example, in Calgary, where this occurred, there's only one shelter that takes in only men in a city of 3 million people. Quote, additionally, survivor groups helping men in this situation recommend against retaliating, especially for a big giant dude like Dustin, because the bigger party is more likely to get arrested if police are called. I just want to put this out there. No one is complicit in abuse, plain and simple. Abusers know you can leave. They use mind games to fuck with your head because, yeah, they're just assholes. They'll make you believe that you don't deserve better, or no one will believe you, and abusers are master manipulators. I'm going to link in the show notes some resources that can help you or someone you know out of these kind of situations. The biggest one I want to get out is endingviolencecanada.org/getting help. The rest of them will be listed because reading out websites is not going to help anybody. So that is the horrifying case of Dustin Paxton out of Regina, Saskatchewan. Thank you, Eric, for suggesting this case. And if you or anyone you know is in this type of situation, or any type of situation, just know that you can reach out to us and we will do whatever we can to help you. So thanks, guys. I apologize, it is a very short episode. We originally recorded this together, but the audio just didn't want to work, and this is my second time recording this solo because my editing on the first one got all wonky, so hopefully this one works out better, and the next couple cases will be longer, especially in March, so just enjoy these little small ones while before we get into big giant ones again. Stay safe, lock your doors, be nice to each other, and we'll see you later. Bye!
To stay updated on all our projects or to follow our journey even more closely, you can find us on Instagram
at the Voiceless True Crime Podcast,
on Twitter
at Voiceless True.
For any case suggestions, reviews, or comments, you can email us at
voicelesspodcast@gmail.com.
And to donate to our podcast and become a member of our Patreon, head on over to the link in our Instagram bio. Patrons receive exclusive perks and bonus material.
Stay safe, wash your hands, and lock your doors.